Welcome to Composers Roundtable Episode 1, the podcast for music makers, composers, songwriters, or anyone interested. This episode is hosted by Sam, Matthias, Reed, and Simeon. In this episode, how did we all get started? Spitfire's new library Abbey Road's Wondrous Flutes, East West new engine Opus, and a whole lot more. Enjoy. Since this is the first episode, I thought we could introduce each other a little bit, just say who we are and what we do and maybe where we can find you or anything you want to say that seems interesting. So I thought, is it okay we start with you, Matthias?
Yeah, of course. I'm not sure how much time you want to take for this, but I can go through my whole history here, but I did make a few notes. So I'm Matthias. I'm mostly a hobbyist composer, at least that's how I would describe myself currently. I study game design, so I do and specialized on the audio side there, doing sound effects and also music. But I actually worked with music before that for quite a while. I had piano lessons. I wasn't very good at them, but I had them, so that came in pretty useful. And I actually started with, I think my very first sample library was either Hollywood Strings or Miroslav, probably Miroslav, because I actually found this little very dodgy looking blank CD that has Miroslav on the back. So I'm not sure where that came from, but it might not be the entirely correct version. I'm not sure. At least at that time, I think I must have been maybe 16, 17 when I got that. So yeah, I'm not sure where that, but it's probably an under the counter version. But after that, I probably got into Hollywood Strings. I couldn't even run it. I have the version with like, it's like 20 CDs or something like that. So if anyone ever complains about download speeds, just imagine having to deal with putting in 20 CDs that it took hours. I couldn't even really properly run it, but I had it anyway because I really wanted it. And so that's how I got started into the samples. I think I also, one other part, another prop I brought, is this one, the Soundpool CD from Magic, because that's actually, even before I started with sample libraries, I started just with dragging around loops, kind of like how you do in GarageBand probably. That was something. Also, Finale, I remember playing around with that, and I tried to figure out like which version I used at the time. Currently it's at version 25 or 26. I can't even find like how far back the version went that I used, but it's really probably very old. And I also wasn't very good at notation, so it was mostly just randomly clicking around and trying to make something work. Let's see if there are any other things. Yeah, I think I started taking music, like music was always there from pretty early on, but I really only started to take it seriously probably into my early 20s, somewhere around that time when I started to get into game design and focused on audio. And one thing that really started to help was watching Mike Furter's masterclasses. Some of you might know him, some of you may not, but those really helped me develop more just general skills. And one thing I remember that really actually drove me a little bit crazy at the time, someone asked me, like, I was playing piano at the house and a friend came over and asked me, like, how do you know what a major scale is? And I told them, well, I can just hear it. But I didn't actually really know, like, well, what is it actually? And that started to nag at me. So that pushed me into trying to learn more about music, learn more about the theory. And I had a little bit of an epiphany about that as well, that most of the theory, which I really thought was really scary, I'm very much a by-ear kind of guy, but most of it can just be brought down to just distances between notes. And if you view everything through that lens, that can really help. So I hope maybe if there's someone else out there who also tends to work by ear, maybe knowing that if you focus just on distances between notes, it's a lot easier, all the theory stuff. So that might be a good point for someone. Let's see, I've got some notes here. I think, oh yeah, there's one more thing that I wanted to say, and that's, although I actually did have all those piano lessons, I actually wanted to play the clarinet when I was younger, and I tried to pick it up later, but I didn't really spend or afford the time to really properly study it. But Maybe sometime I'll pick that back up. But for now, it's the piano, and it's for composing purposes. That's actually probably a more useful instrument.
Really nice. You know, I get so much nostalgia when you're talking about these things. I definitely remember all those pains, you know, about swapping CDs and all that stuff. I remember it very well. So great. You guys have any questions to Matthias or? Nope, not at the moment. Shall we continue with Reed? So how did you get started, or how did you get into this whole composing on a DAW, or whatever you want to say?
Well, when I was about 8 years old, I think that's when I started it on the violin. And I played in kids' orchestras for a while. And then in my teens, I played in rock bands. And I played lead guitar. And while I was waiting around, when you're playing in garage bands, there's a lot of sitting around. So the organ player showed me, he said, well, that's a G chord. Here's a G chord on the organ. And then I bought a piano for $50. And I started learning violin, but learning piano. And I already could read, sight read, because of being a violinist. So I could sight read very, very slowly on the piano. So then I, in college, I studied some music, but by that point I'd gotten interested in movies. And so it wasn't my major. I was doing much more movie studies and making movies and things like that. And afterwards, that became my career. I worked 40 years in the film business. And I did do a soundtrack for a feature called Ghost Sisters, where the cameraman was Jonathan Demme. So I actually have collaborated with a Oscar-winning director, though he wasn't the director. He was the cameraman. But I didn't really, I always played. I played every single day, but it wasn't my profession. It was something I kept just, I wanted to keep the joy in it, because there was so much compromise in actually working my job. I don't know. Even when I read about other composers, I can see all the stress that they have actually doing composition for pay. So I got involved through an actor I knew with a program called Sequencer Plus, which came out in the 80s. And it was just the greatest program. And he showed me how to use it. His name was Tom Noonan. And he became a director, actually. And he showed me how to use it. And then I started composing. But it didn't actually make any sounds. You had to play it through your keyboards and sound modules. And I went on. And so all my recording was done through a big tape deck, two-track TAC, and if I wanted an effect, I had to buy it. You know, it had to be hardware. And so I had these big racks of reverbs and EQs and compressors, and that was how I did it. And eventually, I ended up on Logic after going through every program you can imagine. And when I changed back to the PC, I went to Cubase. I would say more than, I'm more of a songwriter, and then I got interested after I went to the VI Control website. I got interested in orchestral music, so I started to study it and learn about it, but I wouldn't say I'm on the level with you guys in terms of being able to actually do it. I'm just interested, you know, so... And I think that's it.
Great. It's really nice to hear. Thank you, Reed. Well, let's get on with Simeon.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, so it's like walking down memory lane. It's really interesting to hear everybody's stories, because it's like we all start at different places in our lives, what influences us. And most of the time, it's when we're very young. And that's what happened with me. It was around 5 years old. You know, going to church, and a gentleman that my father worked with was good friends. He was a blind gentleman that played piano and organ and banjo and guitar, everything that you can imagine. And so even at that young age, I found myself attracted to that, just to go up and sit with him during the church services, just sitting there and watching. And so it's like the music just reached out and grabbed me and said, you know, this is what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. And from there, it was like, you know, as a teenager, I you know, traveled in the truck, pickup trucks and vans with the, like the quartet groups at church, you know, and played. And then they would have, you know, like the New Year's Eve service where you would have several different groups come together. And sometimes they wouldn't bring an accompanist. And so they would say, hey, Simeon, jump on there. And so I said, well, what are you going to sing? And they just said, well, do you know this song? I said, well, just start singing and I'll catch up. So they start singing. And so I just jump in and follow them. And then piano lessons were kind of a really funny thing because the piano teacher made the mistake of actually playing the lesson before she gave it to me. And so I was going through all the Thompson books and trying to learn how to read and that type of thing. But she would play it and I would hear it and then I would play it. It's like I think my eyes and my ears. So if my eyes are like a Volkswagen Beetle and my ears were like a Ferrari. So it's like my ear was so far ahead of where the notes were. And then the defining moment was when my choir director said, hey, you need to go audition for the performing arts school. You know, they're having auditions. And so it was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be so great. Until they put the piece of sheet music in front of me. And it's just like exercises, you know, and it was like, I was like a deer in the headlights. And I said, oh my gosh. So it wasn't only the stress of being under that pressure, but it was like, now I've got a sight read. And I, you know, it's like, so I'm looking at the notes, I'm going, F-A-C-E-E-C-D. And they go, next. And so unfortunately I didn't make that audition, but what happened was, my life, has been so blessed with being able to, literally just go all over the world, playing with different, artists and ministries. I think one of the most profound events was in the Philippines in the mid-90s where, we were playing in front of 500,000 people at one time. And so music has always been a part of it. And then you have the technology side of it. And Heinbach is really, really kind of funny because if me and Heinbach would have met when we were like 9 or 10 years old, we would have had so much in common because I was blowing up cassette players and taking apart every new electronic gadget that would come. I would take it apart. And so just the curiosity of what makes things work, why does this sound the way it sounds? And my uncle had a garage studio. He played bass and he had reel-to-reels and everything. And so lots of fun there. My first computer was a Commodore 64, and I was still trying to sight read using music construction set, trying to put notes on a stave and trying to understand how all that works. But then in high school, was something that really transformed where I was going as a musician. But well, let's go back up. You know, there's so much that we might have to have two episodes for, these wonderful stories because they're inspiring. But this was a cathartic moment in 1977. Now that year is very significant to a lot of us because that was the year that Star Wars debuted in the theater. So they took the whole middle school to the debut of Star Wars. And so you have all of these middle school students, you know, packed, the theater was packed. You've got the 70mm, you got the giant, the biggest screen in the theater and the sound and everything. And so experiencing, hearing that B flat chord, bum, ba ba bum, ba 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 ba, you know, the first time it was like, it's like, I'm in. I'm in. And it was like, you know, and then it's just like, so how do I do this? Because I'm hearing all this orchestration in my mind and I don't know how to sight read and all this stuff. So it was like, so that started a journey. But in high school, I think I was a junior in high school that I wanted to play trombone. But I couldn't play trombone because I couldn't sight read. And then the armature, I was making my armature make the note to hit the note that I was hearing. So it was like, you need to get out of band and go to choir. So I went to choir, and then all of a sudden the band director comes and gets me and says, I want to show you some things. So he sits me down with a chord chart. He says, look at this. This is an F major 7 chord. This is a minor chord. He started teaching me chord symbols and how to read charts. And then I got into jazz band. Mm-hmm. And it was just so funny. If you've ever seen the Goldbergs, the TV series, the Goldbergs, there's a guy in the school that's always going around wearing a Rush, one kind of Rush t-shirt or another. I was playing a Rhodes, and then the guitar player, great friend of mine, he was a guitar player, and then the drummer, both of them thought that they were Neil Peart and Alex Lifeson. So I was in jazz band with all of these Rush guys, learning all of this wonderful things. And so again, it propelled me into this. So Here we are today. My company, or whatever you want to call it, I've been helping songwriters and people that are involved in music ministry and various aspects of what they do. I say, listen, if you've got a song, call me on the phone, leave a voicemail, and then I'll send you something. So it's like, it's been such an honor to be able to do this. I think I've been doing this, for over 30 years. And I know I don't look more than 23, but you know, it's been an amazing journey for sure. The past 20 years, I was the accompanist for Larnell Harris, a 5-time Grammy Award, 11 Dove Award winner, singer, one of the greatest gospel singing voices around, just incredible. And so being under that took me to different levels of in playing and being an accompanist. And that's one thing I like about this idea of the Composer's Roundtable, because there's a proverb that says, iron sharpens iron. We are in our little windows and our little cubicles here and our little virtual worlds. And so when we can come together and share our experiences, share what works for us, what doesn't work for us, it opens our world up to amazing possibilities. Listen, I want to learn from you guys because I've got a project that I'm working on right now that I've got like 14 different arrangements, and so I'm trying to orchestrate them. The problem is, this guy is a violinist. He graduated from the Curtis Institute. He knows how to sight read, and then I'm sending him stuff, and it's just like, so I'm sending my orchestral renderings to someone that knows how the orchestra works. Mm. And so that's a little frightening for me, mm-hmm. because it's like, he knows what's going on. And I want to learn more about how the orchestra works. Mm. There's nothing like sitting in the middle of an orchestra. It's one of the most amazing things. You're at the piano and you're surrounded by the real thing, and it is just life-changing. Mm. One of the fun things too, and this will be the last thing for now, is that our orchestra here in Louisville is where I am, is that they have Star Wars with the orchestra. So you're sitting there with the full orchestra there on stage, the big screen is above them, and the orchestra plays the soundtrack. And wow, that is cool. Such an amazing experience. So we were supposed to see Return of the Jedi this last year, but we all know what happened with that. But we saw the first episode, and then Empire Strikes Back. Just amazing things. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of this. I can't wait to learn and to share more. Thank you so much, Samuel.
Oh, thank you all you guys, and thank you, Simeon. That was really nice to hear. You said so many good points, so I don't want to give too much feedback back. But we'll talk more and more and more about these things. And I just want to say I love virtual instruments, but every time I see a real orchestra, it's like, I'm not worried that it's going to take over. It's not the same thing. But anyway,
No. And I'm not excited at all about any of this stuff. it just is very boring to me. I don't get very excited, so forgive me.
I'll get you there.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so hi, my name is Sam. I'm from Sweden, and how did I get here? Well, let's see. I have a little YouTube channel. I do composing for all kinds of projects, theater, a lot of dance lately. I've done a lot of sync music or production music. But I've been doing music for, I would say professionally, for about 20 years, over 20 years, actually. What am I saying? I'm older than I thought I was. But I started...
Funny how that works.
Yeah, it is. Oh, God, time flies. But I started quite early with music. My father, both my father and my stepfather, another story, were musicians, particularly my stepfather, a very talented guitarist and teacher. So I grew up with that and always listened to it, him practicing guitar in the evening. And music was always in my life and I always wanted to do it. And so in Sweden, we have a system where you can start to practice an instrument. It's almost for free, but you can't choose always what you want. Everybody wants the piano. So I got the trumpet. Interesting. And I have musical talent, so to speak. So I could play, but as you talked about before, the embouchure is just didn't work out. So after 6 years of struggle, I just realized that it's piano, because, you know, I'm an intellectual guy. I think everything needs to be in front of me. Like, music theory has always been super easy for me. I know everything about it. But the whole... but practically playing, it's not my thing. So I've realized after a lot of years, even though I've been a musician, that I'm not really a musician. I'm a producer, composer. And one of the reasons I realized that, well, I've known about sequencing for all my life because my father showed it to me. He worked as a music teacher and they had in the early days those, what was it, sound canvas or something like that, that you connect with MIDIs and all that. So I was like, wow, I love that. I liked that I could create the whole band, the whole orchestra myself, like, because I hear it, right? But how can I make it happen, you know? Piano is great, but, you know, I just really wanted to get all the sounds out of my head. But the problem was, I was never really that guy that practices 5 to 7 hours a day. If you have to do that if you're going to be a concert pianist. I even tried, actually. But I love piano, but I don't have it. And it just, I'm happy I realized that, because even though I love piano music, I don't think I will be happy playing 5 to 7 hours a day, whatever you have to do in order to be a concert pianist. So more and more, I just try to sort of save up to that idea. How can I create the music instead that I hear? And I started, when I got some money, I finally bought myself the first Atari that had this MIDI interface, and I bought myself a sound canvas, and I started to play with the Cubase on this black and white monitor, and I just loved it. And I've gone with Cubase since then. Every upgrade I've been purchasing and getting, and I like other DAWs as well, but it's just that I know it like the inside of my glove. I just really know how it works. So we might talk more about that later, but I'm really happy that the technology is advancing, that I can more quickly every day produce what I hear in my mind, whatever it is. And that's what I do now, more or less. And I realize, yeah, because I know theory and I know how the in and outs, I've been starting to teach through YouTube, you can say. That's another way of doing this. Yeah, I'm sure there's so many more things I can say. So we can always ask each other, we'll find out eventually. But that's a good start.
I just wanted to add that Simeon left out that he has this wonderful, wonderful YouTube channel where he just plays like an angel. And he takes all the software that's coming out and he brings such love and enthusiasm and incredible talent to it that, I mean, he has a lot of followers, but I'm one of them. And
Thank you so much.
I'm really, really excited about the building. I mean, it's great. I agree with what you say about how it's so nice for us all to talk to each other. And I really cherish the friendships I have with other people who are composers and who mess with music software. But, you know, Simeon, I've been following, and I just think what he does is so great.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think one of the things that this in particular, it helps us to break down that competitive idea that we're all in competition with each other, because that's not what it's about to me, because we each bring something special and different. And so it's like when we get together and we can discover, it's just like going back to that wall analogy. We live in this little world here, and it's just like, I think being able to travel the way that I was so blessed to be able to do, it exposed me to so my world is so big. That's why I encourage people, if you can travel, if you can go visit other countries and experience different things. I tell you what, I was coming back on a trip and a friend of mine gave me this. He said, "You remind me of Joe Beam." And I said, "Joe Beam, who in the world is that?"
All right.
And he said, "Next time I see you, I'm going to give you a CD." And this is the Joe Beam CD he gave me. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And then with Amazon Music in the car, that's pretty much all I listen to is Desfinado, and just those beautiful melodies and then the orchestrations. So it's great. So here I go again. I'm rambling, but
I actually met Tom Jobim.
Oh, really?
Unbelievable.
Wow. Okay. My first wife was Brazilian, so okay. I spent a lot of time in Rio, and there is such a rich diversity of Brazilian music. It's not just Tom Jobim, and in fact, Bossa Nova's very old stuff, but I was obsessed with it. In those days, I had a lot of, from all these people, Chico Buarque, and other musicians. But I met him. That was kind of crazy.
Wow.
And I think one of the things that really got me interested in world music was seeing the film Black Orpheus, which had music. Some of the music was by him. And I was so knocked out by that. Mm. And in terms of what Simeon's talking about in travel, when you actually go to a country, like while I was in Brazil, I went to samba schools, places where people get together. So like regular people come together to learn a song, which they will then compete with during carnival. So they're all in this place and they're playing drums. They're not musicians, they're just learning their part. So it's really interesting to actually encounter how music is played in the real places. And I would say my big love is world music.
Yeah, excellent. Now I wanted to riff on that too. It's really important what you both said. And that's one of the reasons I instigated this whole podcast thing is that, I have a tendency to sit here at my computer or, I collaborate with people, but it's even outside of Corona, it tends to be by email because, it's international, but you don't have to meet all the time. So I sit here and do my stuff and I just finished a dance project that was really great. It was really wonderful to see the music with the dancers, but I still wish, how can we talk more? How can we collaborate? How can we do something? And so even though we're not playing music here, well, who knows, but I still love this idea that you just said that we can share our ideas and our struggles because, as you say, there's no competition and we might have similar stories. We can support each other and it might be interesting to hear how you got to a certain place. So for me, that's one of the driving forces for behind this.
Yeah. I think it's very important. If I can jump in on the note of competition, speaking just for myself, I don't currently have any intention of making this my job because I kind of have the same fear that I'll probably lose much of the joy that I currently have with music if I try to make it a professional job because it's so hard. And I heard it from several teachers as well, audio people, and it's such a cutthroat industry. And I don't even know how it is in the film industry, but it's probably very similar. And you hear a lot of those stories where people are really stressed out, working very hard. I'm not sure I would be able to enjoy music if it were my job. So I'm no competition.
Well, and now the thing is, practically every human being that has a cell phone or a tablet can be a composer. So the technology has made the possibility and potential for just about any person to compose music. So the thing is that's why the opportunities are just really not there for most everybody, unless you have established relationships with individuals or film companies or your relationships. And those relationships have to be way back, because if you're just starting out today, I don't know what in the world somebody would do. And now, just recently, Time Warner and Discovery, their networks have merged, and Discovery was already on this path of using just, you know, off-the-shelf library music and not really utilizing composers like they used to. So, things have changed. Everything has changed. Like just the basic recording. You can't just go and make a CD project or a record project because there's no CDs. The stores are not selling CDs. The artists that I know that need CDs are the ones that are going and doing live venues where the audience can take home a physical product. But that's not the general marketplace. So if there is a word that we've learned in 2020, it's the word pivot. And so you've got to be flexible and to be able to be able to adapt. So one of the great military phrases is adapt, improvise, and overcome. And so as a musician, that's what we have to do. And personally, I've taken the road less traveled because this is all I do. And so there's feast and famine. But, you know, I'm so amazed that that's why when I do a video or something, I'm just amazed, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity, because it's just like it's amazing then how we can do this. But it takes risk, it takes courage, and you can't. It's the long haul. You've got to say this is what I'm going to be when I grow up, and you've got to do it. But the thing is, you know, every Tom and Jane and Joe and you know, they can do a film score. But is it going to be something that's going to stand above the rest? And I think that's what has to happen. You've got to have something that's going to bring you up above all of the rest of the noise that's going on down here.
But I also think it's things are changing. As you said, I totally agree with everything,
Simeon. Absolutely.
But I don't know how far we need to go back. But way back, you know, the biggest reason for you succeeding in music, unfortunately, this is actually true, was money. Because you needed to be very rich in order to be able to afford practicing or going to this specific school, so having this contact. So if you go, I don't know, 50, 60 years back and didn't have all this stuff to produce, there were very, very, very few people, a high elite, who could do that first, just to start with, you know. So I think it's just that the challenges are changing. So it's, you could say it's both it's great and a curse that everybody can do it. But I that's something maybe we can talk later about a particular library that everybody's upset about. But I don't think it really matters. You still need to work hard, and you still to be, you know, passionate. Absolutely. And do great stuff no matter the tools or the settings. And maybe there's true that in certain aspects of all this is more difficult and this is easier. But I'd rather see it as, you know, this is what's happening now, and this is what you need to do in order to succeed or continue this, more or less. And as you said, we need to adapt to it. And I say that so, even though it's really hard, so people don't get too depressed, like, now it's impossible. Nah, it's always possible, but it's difficult, of course. But I don't think it's not more or less difficult, it's just different yeah. aspects, yeah.
And there's a great reward when you bust through that barrier, when you make that breakthrough, when you've persevered, and when you listen to something and you go, oh my gosh. So there's great reward in that perseverance and like you said, yeah.
Absolutely. Great. Oh, this is good. So just a reminder, everyone listening here, that this is sort of the first episode of Pilot. So we will see where this goes. We're trying things out today, and this is a natural evolution. So as we learn each other more and we know more how the format works, we will see what happens. But if you're listening and if you have any ideas or comments, you can always comment that or write to us. And if you have any tips or what else we can do or anything you want to listen to or something you find interesting. So I thought, unless you guys have something else you wanted to add, that we could go on with if you have any sort of news or interesting, something you thought about that has happened recently in the audio world or the DAW world or the virtual instrument or anything in a composing world that you wanted to talk about or mention.
Well, there is one thing I wanted to mention, that is the Spitfire Audio Abbey Road scoring selection, I think, the Wondrous Flutes that came out.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the walkthrough. I think there's one more coming up. It's I think they sort of leaked that it was going to be Soaring Strings and Brass. Mm-hmm. But in general, these collections, I've been following them, and so far I haven't really felt the need to get any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they always sound nice, and there's nothing really wrong with them, but these pre-orchestrated things, I always just get the feeling I'd rather do it myself if I if I want a piccolo and a flute together. I don't really feel that there's too much of an advantage to having that pre-orchestrated. Although maybe for people who are just starting out, it might be more interesting, and it is fairly affordable, so it might be a good way to get started for some people. But for me, I don't really get a lot out of it.
Actually, there's one thing I want to say that is an advantage to have pre-orchestrated, and that is tuning. Because I hear what you're saying. It's very nice to do it all yourself. I get it. And then you have more options, right? And if you always get it pre-packaged, you might not feel like you know what you're doing or whatever. But one of the best winds library out there is the one called Hollywood Winds by Sid Ensemble. Because it's recorded in ensembles, so all the instruments are sort of working with each other. You can hear that and feel that, so the tuning is really nice and it sounds really good. And I often get way better results using that quite old library now that's quite cheap than, you know, going advanced with another library. So I just wanted to say that I hear what you're saying, but that could be one reason.
Oh, go ahead, Matthias.
I just wanted to say, I think it's a slightly different library, though, Hollywood Winds, and not to be confused with the East-West ones.
Exactly, yeah.
Because most of it is runs and effects, and it's really good for that.
Mm-hmm.
And there also is a staccato patch and a sustain patch, and I think a scripted legato. But these film scoring selections are really... You know, they have the staccato, tenuto, moccato, the longs as well. So they really are, they are kind of trying to aim for not using them in a way you'd use a phrase library or a runs library, but really as a playable library. But then if it's pre-orchestrated, you also get into the issue where if you play a chord and you have four piccolos and five flutes, and sometimes it matters, sometimes it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's absolutely. You're right about that.
So I've actually been using Abbey Road one, and I've got the first two scoring selections, and hopefully I'll get the wondrous winds. What I found is that it's very fast. It's very fast to work with, and that's especially like the legendary low strings.
Mm-hmm.
That legato, that the way that they did the legato with that is just. It's just thick, and I think when you add these other components, it basically, I guess, what you would be, that for lack of a better term, a modular orchestra or a modular type of thing, where you've got that consistency. So I think for me, when I'm just really trying to work through something fast, I think that's where it really comes in handy.
Exactly.
It's just really quick to just jump in there, and I've got to really be careful about using too many fingers. Because that's my downfall.
Mm-hmm.
You get piano fingers instead of orchestra fingers.
You're a piano player, right, Simeon? Right.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I just wanted to say that because that is, I always said that that's the biggest problem for composers or piano players. They play too many,
biggest
many notes.
Biggest pitfall, yeah.
Exactly. It's good you bring that up. Yeah. I just wanted to say, I think that, I don't know, if you buy all of the stuff in Abbey Road 1, maybe it gets really expensive. But otherwise, I don't know. Otherwise, I want to say I think their pricing model is really cool. Because, I can buy that little thing and that little thing. And Orchestra Tools is also starting that through Design Player. So I like that. Instead of just...
Well, they just released a pipe organ. Orchestral Tools that just released a free pipe organ.
Yeah,
so,
that's true. Good.
You want to grab that.
But how much will it cost... With Abbey Road, if you buy all these little,
I don't know. Does anyone know?
Well, if you look at the video, I've got you know how everybody's got like the Pixar theory, and you know, so I'm working on a Spitfire Abbey Road theory, because if you look at the videos, look at those animations that look like North by Northwest at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those little dots, just count how many dots of different colors there are. And I've got a feeling that each of those dots represents a new selection. Mm. So let's say there's 100 dots there. At $49 a dot, that's $5,000. Easy.
Yeah, but yeah, it could be, but so, we don't know that. But what I'm saying, I'm not trying to defend them at all. I'm not a Spitfire guy, but...
No.
But I'm saying that I still like the idea that instead of buying the whole thing, you know, which costs a lot of money, at least, well, I just need that and that. And I was saying that about Orchestra Tools with their sound player. They're trying to do that as well. And I think that's a really nice idea because, you know, unless you're really doing this professionally and have a good income from it, it can feel quite a lot of money to just buy this big library. I mean, if you look at some of the other Spitfire libraries, they're quite pricey, seriously, if you buy the bigger orchestras.
One of the problems that you get into is that you don't necessarily know how a library is going to work for you.
Mm.
And you pull the trigger on it, and then you're stuck with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where like what I love to do, I just love to just kind of say, this is what it sounds like. And I've been blessed to have opportunities to be able to get the libraries for free, to get not for resale. And so that gives me an opportunity to invest time into just kind of laying out the instrument to sort of give you an idea what it's going to sound like and if it's something that's going to work for you. Because if you buy it, you can't return it. And so you've laid out that investment. Now, Vienna Symphonic Library, they've got a 15-day grace period, which I think is fantastic.
Well, I didn't know that. That's very good. I didn't know that.
Yes. And so let's say you've spent $600 on a library and you're going, oh my gosh, this just is not going to work for me. So they allow you a 15-day period to say, okay, so this is not going to work. I need it, and they will take care of you.
Seriously, we should push that somehow, that more libraries have a 14-day or something. So, like any other product you can return within, mostly, at least here in Scandinavia, I don't know how it is where you live, but by law, we can return anything, like even games, actually. So why can we do this with unionized? No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, we should really go for this, you know?
Yeah. Actually, if I can jump back for 1 second into
Of course, I'm sorry. We got carried away there.
Yeah, So the plan, as far as I know, is that they're going to do all these film scoring selections, and sort of these the Abbey Road one is more like an Albion, but they're also planning to do an actual module orchestra, so with single flute, single.
Oh, nice. Okay.
We don't really know if it's going to be single flutes or flutes at two, but an even more broken up version. And I think their strategy is just. They're sort of going top down. So they're doing the big library first and then the pre-orchestrated one and then the even, more broken up individual.
It's exciting. It's exciting for sure.
But I wonder, does anyone know, and I don't want to spend too much on this, but does anyone know the difference between Albion and Abbey Road 1 and BBC? I mean, I understand it somewhat, but if they're going to expand on the Abbey Road 1, is it going to become a symphony orchestra eventually? Or does anyone know?
Well, so they're basically going to go the same route that they went with the what is called the Spitfire Symphonic series, basically. So what was previously Mural and Sable and they had all these really pretty names, but they changed it to Symphonic Sings, Symphonic Brass, etc. Because otherwise, nobody is going to find it. Nobody's going to type in Mural in the search engine and find a string library.
That's true.
Even though I really like those names, those old names, a lot better. But it's going to be more like that. At least that's the impression I'm getting, that they're basically redoing what they did in Air Lindhurst Hall, but in Abbey Road.
And okay, so would it be true to say that it's kind of repackaging, but in a new space?
Yes, and of course they will say they have more dynamic layers, more round robins, more new technology. I mean, they're almost... What is it, 10 years further now? So, yeah, you'd hope they would have gotten better at what they're doing. So,
and by the way,
what they did with the Symphonic series is they had all these recordings that they didn't use in the original. And then they re-edited them, and then they added it into the pro level of the Symphonic Orchestra, all at Air. So it's the same recordings that they did when they did them originally. They just had never utilized them, so they just went ahead and just picked them up off the cutting floor, so to speak. And then you have in the pro version, you have those stereo mixes by Jake Jackson, And I actually put together an ensemble patch with Unify using just those stereo patches, so I could have all of that, those stereo mixes in one playable layer. And that was kind of fun, being able to have that. I think being able to have those specialized mixes kind of help get you out of the box quick as well.
Yeah.
The other thing that we're seeing is that the original series, so you see the originals, Intimate Strings and Epic Strings, those are actually some of the discontinued Albions that they've repackaged in their Spitfire player. Mm. Intimate Strings is gorgeous. I just, the texture with that, but that's from, what is it, Logria?
Logria, exactly, yeah. I don't know how to pronounce it, but I know which one you mean, the second one. Yeah,
came beautiful, out. Beautiful.
I agree.
So I think they're trying to get away from Contact. The reason they couldn't get away from Contact with the Symphonic series is because so many people have been invested in the original Symphonic series that they couldn't, and that's what we were expecting with the Pro version. Well, they were going to move it all to the Spitfire player, but they had to keep it in Contact because you have all of these guys that have been using the Symphonic series for so many years that to switch them like that wouldn't be good. So with Abbey Road, they're dedicating it in their their player. So they're being able to start from scratch and be able to build it from the ground up into their ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Contact licenses to get your library into that Contact player is astronomical. Yep. I think you're talking thousands of dollars for a developer to get into that. That's why you see like Experimenta Project and a lot of other, audio brewers, some of those third-party developers. They can't do that. Mm. And so that's why you have to have that full version of Contact. So it's a big world out there.
Yeah, Contact is living on that. I just wanted to, sorry, I don't want to interrupt anyone. I just haven't heard Reed for a while. I just wonder if you had anything to add.
I think what's happening with Spitfire is that they need to keep coming up with new stuff. Mm. And they have unusual libraries that are great, like Bernard Herrmann and specialty libraries, swarms, and things like that. But I think that what we're going to see over the coming decades, because they're such a big company, they'll just have to keep coming out with new whole orchestras. And, you know, I bought into the Studio Orchestra, which nobody even mentions, but that was one of them that they came out with. So I think they'll keep doing good work, and I would imagine that as they move forward, they will become better and better at it. It won't just be that they're using more rooms to bring them out in.
It's the question becomes, where do you go from Abbey Road in terms of orchestral sampling? Is there anywhere you can go beyond Abbey Road? It's kind of the gold standard. And secondly, just to hook back into what you were saying, Simeon, I understand they're moving away from Contact, but I really don't jive with their player.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No, it still has a long way to go, in my opinion. To me, it feels like someone made a very pretty interface that was there to look pretty, but it isn't pragmatic, at least in my opinion, at all.
Yeah.
I hate working with it, to be completely honest. But I'm not sure how... Obviously, you feel differently about that.
Well, I just have gotten, I guess, used to it, and then I have things mapped to my controllers, and so especially like articulations switching, and then the faders and things, so able to kind of get around it better. Synchron player is the same thing. Contact for me is very, it's restrictive. It feels restrictive, especially like the Spitfire, those early Contact libraries, that everything is just small and it's very, it's just confined to, what Contact gives you. But the sounds of the Symphonic Orchestra are... Yeah. They're spectacular.
But I agree. That's a very good point, Matthias. I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe it's not good. Maybe you don't like it. But it's also true. I've noticed that more and more, that you have to learn your sample engines. I mean, you really, and not just how to do everything, but also set it up at all your levers and, buttons and things. For me, that's extremely important, because I can't sit there with my mouse and like, it's too much work. I want this button to do that and this and this and this. So I spend a lot of time setting up that everything is configured so I can touch it. And I don't know so much about that player that you're talking about, Matthias, but But that could be one thing too, I think, because I also agree with Simeon. We're so used to contact to sort of being almost a standard for everybody, but it is quite restrictive. It's not that easy to work with. I find that the interface is quite clunky, even though you get a lot of power under the hood. But most people, and I'm one of them, don't know how to use all that stuff when you click on that.
And it depends on the developer. So I've seen developers do phenomenal things with the contact engine. And then others, they it's just like, you know, the sounds are great, but I can't
do anything.
It doesn't move me. I'm not pulled into it. So I'm a very intuitive person where I love for the interface to pull me into it. This is what I tell a lot of churches and things. So that when technology gets in the way, or when you can hear the technology, then it's too much. So that's one of the things, is removing the barriers. So, you know, anything that kind of gets in between your creativity and the instrument, you gotta get rid of that, or you gotta find a way around it, because it's gonna kill you. It's gonna kill the creativity. It's gonna kill your workflow.
Yeah, it's good. It reminds me of an old friend who told me you can't hear a really good sound system. So it's kind of the same thing.
Absolutely.
So the same thing with the. But anything? What was there? Anything? We're interrupting everybody all the time. So let me know if it's too much. But anything else you wanted to say?
I just think
about,
it does make things harder to have so many different players to deal with play and engine. And so even though contact, there may be things that could be better in other things, it's very, very nice for me, particularly because I use NKS and I like everything being all pre-mapped to the knobs and on my controller and to hear the patches. Mm-hmm. So even with all the problems that there are in contact, I still find it, you know, it's just familiar. In terms of getting right to work, to be able to know everything and to immediately jump, I get a new library, I can use it instantly. Whereas, you know, I have Sign Player, I'm still figuring it out.
So it's the barrier you were talking about. Sorry.
It's not like I don't like the Sign Player. I do. But I'm not an expert on the Sign Player.
Yeah, maybe I was thinking a nice segue then, because we're talking about players and all that, and I'm working on the Opus engine, as I call it, the Opus Player, whatever, the new one by East West. And actually, I just produced my first video on it. It's going to be 3 videos, and it will come out, well, I don't know when we're going to air this episode, but tomorrow, as we're talking, it will be next day, so it will come out soon. And yeah, it's quite a beast. You can do a lot with this one. I would like to say that if you compare it to Kontakt, which you really shouldn't, but you could say that the Kontakt really has a lot of stuff under the hood. If you know, if you click that monkey wrench or whatever it is up in the left corner, a whole new world opens up. It's like, oh, you know, you can really mess up things there if you haven't. I actually don't touch it too much. the Opus is not that. It's not an engine where you can manipulate all your files to Kingdom Come. It's more about, I think so, the experience. You can set it up the way you want it, so you can instantly play and get the results. It has a lot of small tweaks. Now, obviously, to get familiar with all that, it requires a little bit of work. But I find if you understand all that, then I think they really did quite a lot. I mean, it's really good, actually, I have to say.
Now, did they partnered with Sonya Score, didn't they?
Yeah, and also some of the developers. I forgot now the story, but some of the Wolfgang's developers. The Wolfgang's who were developing the Kontakt. So you can see a lot of ideas coming from there, especially complete control ideas and stuff like that.
But it's really, I think, Sonya Score was only involved in the orchestrator.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
And but yeah, I just wanted to say, so it really pays if you like the Opus or play, even it really, it's a good idea to get involved and learn this stuff, because I don't think it takes that long, really, but you will discover, I can do that. It's that kind of experience that really help your workflow quite a bit. So
maybe I can ask you one thing about, maybe you figured out a way to do this, but is there a way to have the you now hear a preview sound when you click on a patch, and I always disable it because it's a little bit jarring to me. I don't like it, so I want it turned off. But I want it turned off like by default for everything, and I couldn't find any settings for that.
Right. I am in contact with the developers, so I'm sending them the bugs because Opus is new. And I don't know this, but I suspect it was rushed because of, well, it's been a difficult year for everybody, and it was supposed to be out last year, actually. And it's like, oh, we got to get it out. So I think they pushed it out now, and it's not finished. Now, I want to say it works well. It really does. It's not, I mean, not on me. It's not crashing. It's not functioning. I mean, it works really good. I can play anything I want, and I'm happy with it. But I notice here and there, there's small things that are not finished or... I mean, that sounds bad. It is pretty finished, but it's, you know, okay, they forgot that thing. So that's one of the things. I haven't found a way to, by default, turn that thing off because I agree. Mm. With the orchestra, it's not very good to have that preview on. No.
I have another quick question because I also looked a little bit into the engine, and I think it's in MIDI tools. They have a pocket recorder, and I've tried to figure out, like, who would use that and what would you use it for? Because it allows you to record MIDI that you're playing into the engine, and then you can save it out and play it back.
Yeah, I know. I haven't really got an idea either.
Why is it there?
Yeah, they actually have a few things that I wonder a little bit about. I just had this theory that it kind of, I don't know why you want to do this, but it's so powerful that you don't need a sequencer anymore, kind of. You could use the whole thing as a standalone. You can even set more outputs than one in standalone if you wanted to. So I don't know if that is the idea, that if you just, you know, load it up somewhere on your keyboard, I don't know, with a computer, that you can do most of the things there. Because I also wonder about that thing. Why is it there, the pocket recorder? But it kind of works like, what is it called now in Cubase? I'm sure other DOS has it.
Retrospective.
All DOS have this, right? Or no?
No. Yes. I actually have been trying this new utility called Coyote MIDI, and it's a MIDI to keystroke utility. It has a retrospective recorder built in, and I'm telling you, Piano Tech was the first time that I ever had anything like that. I would sit down and I would just play something, and it would remember it, and out of those ideas came some fantastic things. Yeah. Because you sit down and you play something, and then it just goes into vapor.
Yeah, for those who don't know retrospective record, I just want to say, I mean, you pretty much said it, but that's, if you play something and you haven't hit record, the program still remembers your MIDI. It's there in the memory, so you just click a button and there it goes.
That's great.
And maybe that's so sort of useful. An idea in Opus, I just wanted to say. It is very useful.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, they have a few things like that I wonder a little bit about. It's like, let's add this too. You're like, yeah. But it is a very complete thing. And I realized in, for example, the Play tab, it was called the Player before in Play. Now in Opus, it's called Play. There are a lot of sub-menus as well you can get into. So you might forget that, but there's a lot of stuff under the hood that you can change. And they really have listened to the community in terms of customizing it. I could say that Play before, one thing that was good, but also extremely confusing. If you remember all the patch names, if you've seen those in Play, like there were a bunch of abbreviations. Now, I get it because I'm a nerd, but not everybody did. But the reason they did that wasn't just to be like, look at us. It was really, the patches sounded the same, a lot of them, but they were just different setups. So one of the patches was controlled that way and this patch was controlled that way. So they wanted to give you all those options, which I think most people don't do anymore. It was like, which one I'm supposed to choose? Yeah, you use mod wheel in this one, and this one you use velocity. And so they have done that in different ways in this engine. So you can, or even more, you can set up exactly how you want it. And they have even a perform tab, which I realize you can go really advanced on that one. But just an easy example would be that you can set up the whole keyboard. So maybe these keys do that sound, and those keys do that sound. And if you hit harder, you get that sound. If you get softer, you get that sound. If you press down the pedal, you get that. It's a lot of stuff like that. So you could basically perform without hitting a single key switch or thinking about it. It's a lot of those things.
A lot of the engine libraries are exactly like that. That what you said, you can perform and get all these wonderful effects without worrying about the key switch. I have the Silk library, and it has wonderful performance patches like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can do it your own. And I think that's maybe going back to that question. It seems like the Opus engine is supposed to be, or it's possible to use it outside of a DAW. I mean, a lot of players you can, but really, like, effectively, you can actually use it. You could perhaps perform a whole orchestra without having a DAW. So
I haven't tried it, but I will now, because I'm interested to see how far you could push that.
Yeah,
I'll have to watch your video.
plug my video, of course. But try it out. I'll give some hints, because otherwise the video would be too long. But I show a little bit how you get started, and then you can always try yourself to play with that. Yeah.
At some point, Opus is going to be available for anybody who has other East West libraries, right? It's going to be available.
Isn't it available? Oh, you mean like that? The Opus player. Well, I don't know. I hope so. It would make sense to me that it would. Yeah, that would make sense to me because I. Yeah, that's something
you mean
I have to talk
other
about.
Other people can develop for it?
Well,
is that what you're saying? That other people could develop for it and release their libraries on the same engine? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if I understand correctly, if I owned this library, then all my old East-West libraries could be played with Opus. But
right.
I don't think I can just buy Opus today, but maybe I can.
Here's how it works today.
I don't think it's for sale.
Here's what it works today. If you buy the Opus today or upgrade, or you have the Composer Cloud, that's the cheapest idea, then you get everything in it. So that is the engine itself, then the orchestra, the Hollywood Orchestra is sort of in there, and the orchestrator. And I don't know if they're going to change that, but that's quite a big package if you buy it new. You know, we can talk about if it's a good deal or not, if you don't have it at all. But if you already have the orchestra, then you might not always feel so great to upgrade because it's not that cheap. But I hope that the Opus also will be like Play, so that you can buy that only, or get it maybe if you buy a library. And I don't know this, but I wonder if it has to do with having enough libraries that are upgraded to function with it. Because the idea is that the whole Composer Cloud is going to work through Opus. And since I don't have a Composer Cloud, I don't know if this is true or not, but I think that's the idea. And it could be that maybe only Orchestra is working at this stage. But right now,
no,
it's the whole
I
thing.
I think everything does.
Okay, all right. But then I really hope.
But I don't have the cloud either, so I.
But then I really hope they do that, because it doesn't. I mean, if you have the Composer Cloud, then you have it. So there's no. You don't have to think about it. But it would be interesting, let's say, if you bought a bunch of Eastwood libraries, you know, they should make that available. I think that would be a good idea. You know, you don't want to rebuy.
Just looking from what I can see about Opus. Just from what little I know, and I look forward to your video, but already I could say I wish I had it for Silk and libraries like that.
I think those libraries won't make a difference. And here's what I actually say, that the Play engine is still good enough. And I think, the Opus is better, but I want to say that if people are thinking about upgrading and they don't have the Composer Cloud, the Play is decent still. And you are actually not, the orchestra, a Hollywood orchestra, it doesn't sound that different. It doesn't. It really is the same samples. They have added a few things. They have worked on some EQing. They have worked on some legato changes. They're subtle. It is a difference, and it's like, wow, this is better. But it's not a great difference. It really isn't. The new violin patch is really nice, for example. There are some glitches and pops they have removed. But still, Plays is really good. And when it comes to those libraries like Silk, there's no difference. It's exactly the same. So there's no point really in upgrading that. It won't be better or anything. It will be exactly the same library. So,
what about in ease of use? I'm not saying it would sound different. But
no, it's the same library. It's the same. That's what I say. A lot of people, it's completely new. Well, I mean, it might be new in terms of how it loads and handles the samples. That I don't know. But the interface is pretty much the same. It looks nicer, but it's the same buttons, same, you know, mics and all that. It's really, really similar. You will see that when I show the video, that it's basically a nice-looking upgraded Play engine. It really is. Now, I'm not being critical. I think it's very good, but it's also true that this is Play 2.0, whatever you want to call it. It is.
Mm. Yeah, well, one interesting thing is that I was actually expecting them to change the samples, particularly with the woodwinds, But they didn't do that. So all the sample files are still the same. You can just go into your folder and find them, and they're unchanged.
Yeah, but no.
So all the changes they did make were programmatically and in the programming of the patches.
But they did do something.
Some of them are subtle, but...
Yeah, I have to say, I want to give kudos here. I agree with you. It looks bad on the paper, right? And I hope it doesn't sound like I'm hired by them, because I'm not. But it looks bad on the paper. It's the same thing. I'm thinking, 90% is the same stuff, right? But what they did particularly with the woodwinds, because the woodwinds, everybody knows, it wasn't very good in the orchestra. It wasn't. It was a lot of tuning problems. There was a lot of too obvious legato, like volume jumps. There was phasing issues. And let's face it, haha, pa-da-boom-tsh, let's face it. I'm a dad. No library out there has really managed to get rid of phasing in woodwinds, because it's so difficult. It's just incredibly difficult. I was hoping for this new Cinematic Studios that they would do it, but they haven't. It's good library, but they haven't managed to do it. I wonder if it's possible. But anyway, in Opus, they have really toned down the phasing issue a lot. It doesn't sound like two players anymore. It really sounds a lot better, especially the clarinet. It was just a disaster, actually. So they have made great improvements. They have changed the EQing slightly. So it's a vast improvement, actually. You can now use the winds and feel pretty happy with it.
Yes, I personally wouldn't get it for the new instruments, though, because that was kind of how I got into it. I was interested in the new instruments, and they're fine, but they didn't really blow me away, any of them. And I actually, the more I sat with it, the more I started to appreciate all the subtle changes, because yes, they are subtle, but they do add up in the final orchestration.
The legatos especially are a great improvement. It's very subtle, but it just feels better. Like when you play, this sounds good, but it's a tricky one. I'm going to talk in length about that in the video, but I can mention it a little bit here that if you have the Composer Cloud again, it's just, of course you have it. There's nothing to talk about. Obviously you have it. It's a no-brainer, right? But if you bought the whole Hollywood Orchestra and plus the solo instrument, then it starts to feel a little bit tough to upgrade. I mean, it is good, and I'm happy I have it, dude. But it's not that cheap, the upgrade price. And it feels a little bit like you're rebuying that library. I have to say, that's a peak I want to give to East and West. That it's difficult, because if you look at the whole package, it's really great value. You get one of the most complete orchestral libraries out there, still on the market. And even though it's so old, it's still true, one of the best recordings of an orchestra ever made. Really. Then you can talk about how it's the engine and all that. That's not a story. But really, still, what you get, how massive the orchestra is, how many articulations you get. There, I don't know of any library that beats that. Maybe the new VSL stuff, I don't know. But despite being so old. So if you just look at that, like this library, what you get, orchestra and all that, that's a really good deal. But again, if you upgrade it, if you bought the whole diamond thing, that's difficult. It's difficult.
Yes.
Anyway, I've talked a lot, so what do you guys say?
Well, maybe Simeon or Reed want to jump in, because I think we've been taking the spotlight for a little while.
Well, I don't have it. Do you have it, Simeon?
No. Did you buy it? VSL Elite Strings and the Pro, trying to, listen to how those are different. I tried the Composer Cloud at the beginning of 2020, and I guess it's when things just kind of started rolling. And it was like, it was a bit overwhelming in a way, because I just had so many different libraries and engines to try to focus on, that I didn't get pulled in by it, but I was listening to the pianos. I guess it's when I was really at the beginning of doing my piano library odyssey journey. And so, so I might try to go back and revisit that and just kind of see what's going on with it, because, and I think that's the problem too. You can get so overwhelmed with so many different libraries and so many different things that it kind of locks you up, and you get frozen in a way. So sometimes an abundance of things is handicap. So sometimes having a minimal library, if you just had to work with one library, I think it's sometimes that I don't know. Sometimes you just get too much going on.
I agree.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Sorry, I just wanted to add quickly that I do think that the best thing of the Composer Cloud is the Hollywood Orchestra. The ethnical libraries, some of them are really good, but quite a lot of libraries in East West, and they're not going to like me for saying this, they're outdated. They really are. Mm-hmm. And so, what's good about Opus? I'm going to finish up with this. What's good about Opus is that you can see everything and you can download the sounds directly from there. So if you have the orchestra and the whole Composer Cloud, don't download the whole thing. You work on a project. Oh, I need a sitar. Okay, download. There it is. That's a good
feature. I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just don't get the outdated argument, really. So if we can maybe delve Goliath. Into that a little bit more.
Goliath.
Well,
Goliath.
A sound is a sound, and it's good, and it's not going to get any worse 10 years later. So I always feel... It's a little strange when people say like a sound or library is outdated. No, it's exactly the same as when it was released. Mm-hmm. Question is, like, maybe the programming is outdated. That's something you could argue. But the sound itself, I mean, that it stays the same. So
it's the question of whether the technology and the art of sampling and making instruments, whether it's moved on and how much it's moved on. Mm-hmm. And like I'm working on a video on the Janssen, mm-hmm. the kind of a Chinese dulcimer type instrument.
Oh yeah.
And so I'm looking at all five of the instruments that exist, and it's really dramatic when you look back at the Chinikong library, which was the first one and which was considered the gold standard of its time. It's just been overwhelmed by some of these new instruments in terms of amount of articulations, in amount of velocity levels, 10 different kinds of control that you can have. So many different. Well, you don't really have legato on a Janssen, I don't think.
No, that's true.
But there's just somebody has gone to the instrument and said, how can we really do everything possible? And I think long ago, it was just like, well, we're going to give you a Janssen, but we're not going to, you know, we know so much about what virtual instruments can do today.
But it's also resources.
That's
resources.
In the sense that I think that a library can be outdated. But having said that, I think for that reason, Silk is not outdated.
No, that's a good library.
Even though many, many excellent things have come since, it's still great. And the things that it does are different. And so they haven't been outdated because it has unique approaches to the library, to the cultures and instruments that are inside it.
That's a very good point. And I also want to say that was a really good question, Matthias. And I guess I'm just being lazy about using one word, but it is more complex. And I think that Reed just answered it really well. But what I mean personally, this is a matter of taste. For example, I'm a piano guy, so I hear almost instantly if it's a fake piano or not. And piano is one of the easiest things to sample out there. But I'm extremely picky about my pianos. And the ones in East West are good, actually. But for me, they're not good enough. I mean, and maybe in a recording, nobody can even hear it. But, you know, I see the thing, oh my God, I hear that it's not the right dynamic layer there or something. So it's a matter of how nerdy you are. But you hear it a lot in the legatos specifically, if it works or not. And one great example is the solo instruments in the Hollywood series. They're just
okay. I'll back off there.
There's no. I'm sorry. That's not working at all. I was very surprised because I really like the Hollywood Orchestra, and then I heard those. I'm like, ooh.
Except for the harp. The harp is good.
The harp is good. Harp is excellent. Yeah, I made a video on that one. That's true. Harp is really.
You're getting
good,
into a topic which is really different, and maybe we can get to another time.
Yeah, it really
comes down to the idea of how well you know what the real instrument sounds like. And people, and this drives me nuts, like when I'm on the VI Control forum, people will start raving about some instrument that is really terrible. It's really terrible. And they wouldn't do it if it was a violin and it was that far away, miles away from what a real violin sounds like. But because they don't know the real instrument, they'll just say, oh, this is a really good erhu, you know.
Oh, but and, I just want to...
You know, we're still waiting for that.
Yeah. I want to give you a tip, though. Somebody just told me today, a friend, that I think it's... Oh, I forgot the name. I have to look this... No, I can't look it up right now. I'm sorry. Somebody told me that Chris Hines, if you go to search for a specific composer, I'm so sorry, I don't know it, has created one of the absolute best medieval and folk music libraries. Yeah, I feel like a bad host now. I really should have known this. But when we talk about that, one of the most interesting samples ever, I mean, Silk and all that, they're great. But they're focused on very specific libraries. And there's a lot of instruments out there that are hard to find. And this one, yeah, I shouldn't talk about it because I forgot the name and I'm not helping anyone. But I just found out about it today. And I realized I was so happy that there are libraries who are creating interesting instruments.
Maybe you can edit it in after the fact.
Yeah, maybe I can. I can put it on text here or something. That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
It's exciting that they add all this, that they make bespoke instruments and instruments that you see that on Sound Iron in some places like that. They will have some kind of instrument that there's only one of them or something like that, and they'll rebuild medieval instruments. And that's always very interesting because it gives us new colors to think about. But I feel like I have my hands full.
Yeah.
What I've got.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's true. You can get too much. I have, through the years, I'm trying to reduce all the time, reduce plugins, reduce instruments. I'm really trying to, I want the best, but then remove all the other stuff because otherwise...
Like you need to have an episode of Virtual Instrument Survival.
Yeah.
So, you know it's
topic.
Like, because you, like with it, with like the VSL libraries, you put a terabyte or two on your, it's like, oh my gosh. So I'm getting to a point where there are some things that are going to have to go because it's just, I've got 4 terabytes of NVMe that are screaming. They're full. I mean, I just put one in and it's just like, it's full. And it just blows my mind. And then so you download Spitfire Symphonic Orchestra. That's another terabyte plus. It's like, it just blows your mind. So it's a point now that you have to say, what am I actually going to use? And what's just taking up space? What's just not useful? Because we're blessed with such abundance of choices. So it makes it difficult. And so that's why it's critical to just find the things that resonate with you. Hans Zimmer, I just saw this quote. It was like he said, music is indefensible. It either resonates with you or it doesn't. And I cannot convince you to like something if it resonates with me. So you can play something and man, I just love it. But then I can play for you and it doesn't hit you. It doesn't resonate with you. And no matter how much I want to convince you, it either is going to resonate, it either is going to connect with you or it's not. And that is something about music that is just, so a library, it's either going to connect with you or it's not. And if it doesn't, it just doesn't need to be taking up space on your hard drive,
exactly.
Or your SSD.
That is good elite point. Strengths in a nutshell for me. I can't hear what other people like about it, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
Like, to me, I would describe that one as outdated sounding, actually, if I can use that word. But you have it, Simeon, and I'm curious what your opinion on it is.
Did you see, you need to go watch the live stream I did, and getting into some of the signature mixes.
Okay.
We went some crazy places, and... You know, I just jump into it with both feet and just have fun with it. So maybe something, I guess, I don't know. It's just something, either hits you or it doesn't. But if you can buy it and try it, And then you can send it back.
That's true. Yeah, well, with VSL, no, at least I have that option. So
seriously, that's such an important point. Jesus Christ, more people have to do that, you know, so you really can try it. Because you're talking about, yeah, again, Opus takes a terabyte, and it's just, yeah, not everybody now, has that.
But Matthias, you're talking about Miroslav, so that CD, Miroslav was like, when it first came out, it was like thousands of dollars on CDs on a Kai... using Akai samplers and Akai samplers only having like megabytes of sample memory, and you were paying thousands of dollars for those initial Miroslav libraries, and now IK Multimedia, $29, boom, there you go. It's like, oh my gosh.
Actually, Miroslav was really good. I mean, you know, it wouldn't work today, but it was actually really good. It just didn't
have very good
legatos
for what they did.
But I remember I created some songs way back, and I got a really good result with it. I mean, you know, it's not the same as today, but still, yeah, good samples.
I know there are some people who still use it. Maybe you've heard of Michael Worth or Farkle Friday. He hosts his videos on Friday sometimes, and he really gets into programming his own patches. So he'll take one, like the attack of Miroslav maybe, and then he uses all the old libraries, and I just sort of meshes them together in context, basically reprogramming them. So you'd have to dedicate that time, but it gets really good results with very old stuff.
Yeah, really. So,
and if you took like a crap guitar that cost $75 and you hand it to Eric Clapton, you know, what would he do with it? Probably better than a lot of us would do with a $3,000 or $5,000 guitar. It does have a little bit to do with the abilities of the musician, not just the tools.
You know that
it's not going to turn you into a virtuoso
And that's actually something I wanted to say about the Opus quickly, and then we can go on. The orchestrator, which a lot of people hate, because now you can become an orchestrator so quickly. Okay. And I want to say,
marketing.
I have tried it a little bit, and first I thought, I probably won't use this, because, you know, I know the orchestra fairly well, and I won't. There have been other libraries in the past similar. You hit a button and you get an orchestration going on, and maybe it has been great for inspiration. I don't know. But I always thought that, I don't know, that's probably not for me. But this is something else, because I don't agree with the idea that you just press a chord and then your orchestra is done. That wouldn't work. It wouldn't be interesting music. But it has so many sort of patches, and I don't know exactly how it works yet. I have to dig deeper, where it voices it so nicely. So if you play a few chords, you get like just incredibly perfect voicings from your winds or your brass. And it's such a time saver. So it's not like I just hit a chord and now my music is done. I still have to come out with what I want to do. But instead of writing for first the tuba and then the trombones and then the French horns and then the trumpets and all that, that takes a lot of time to program. Now I sit here and I work out my chords more or less. It's done. And I love that function. And I don't think it's going to, you know, yeah, I have no problem with it. I don't think it's everybody saying now everybody can create music. You still need to know what you're doing, but the time saver.
Well, I had a flashback. It took me into the mall when I was in high school. I was working at a piano and organ store in the mall. I'm standing there, watch this, and you're playing the one note chord, and you have all of this stuff going on, and then you're orchestrating. So it's just like, yeah, you're having this flashback. You too can be a musician with two fingers, you know. So it's one of those PTSD moments.
No, but when I say just, you're going to hear, if everybody just hit a button, so to speak, and use the same as everybody else, then you're not going to sound unique or no interesting. So
I'm
not worried about that, but it's just a time saver. Oh my God, I'm really liking it. You know, the
still
whole
in denial about it.
Well, the whole full
I haven't touched it yet, but you're starting to convince me. So,
well, I can say that what's particularly interesting is more the sections, like the ostinatos, for example, because everybody knows program ostinatos. There's a reason why there are 3,000 ostinatos libraries out there. There's a reason for that, because it's a pain to program, right? All doing all that stuff. So that, or the string sections, or the brass sections, or the winds. It's really, really nice. But you do need some RAM, because they load up all the heavy ones. So you load up one patch and it's 4-6 gigabytes. Like, ooh, But anyway, so I would say the ones that are called score, the whole orchestra, everything's going on, that's more fun and maybe you can get some ideas out of it. But otherwise, the smaller section, the ostinatos, yes, they're fantastic. They're really worth it. I'm sold.
I think they're just tools, these products, like the orchestra and stuff. And it still is up to a composer or a musician to decide how they use it. And I think it's very upsetting when somebody, say, takes Minimal from Sonic Kinetic and just takes something from there and puts it up completely the way it is.
Yeah.
Like it's a loop and calls that a TV commercial. And we can all see that. But that doesn't mean that... you can't use a Sonic Kinetic or the orchestra or the orchestrator or any of these programs and use them and make them musical and make them your music. I think, anyway, I don't have any problem with it. I wish I had it.
I agree with you on that one. I don't have any Sonic Kinetics because I love them. I think they're amazing, but it's hard to explain. I'm one of those, I want to do it myself, but I wouldn't mind having the Sonic Kinetics just to get inspired, perhaps. But then, you know, I have to pay for those libraries. So that's the reason why I haven't bought them. But otherwise, I think they're great. Yeah.
Also, a lot of what I do is just for my own entertainment anyway. So if I can sit and pull out the orchestra and play for 5 hours, I mean, nobody's going to get mad at me about what I did that night. I didn't even push record. I just had fun. And to me, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, more on Opus another time. Is there anything else we would like to add there or any more, anything you've heard, any news? I have a few, I don't know if it's that interesting. I saw a few deals and stuff that I found on the net that people might be interested in.
I think we can maybe close out with those.
Yep.
Those deals. I don't have anything else to add. So.
I just want to say briefly, Native Instruments just released Action Strings 2, and I actually think it's pretty cool. I recommend going checking out the video, how it's working, and it's one of those tools to speed up your work a bit, if that interests you. That looks interesting to me. Native and Isotope, I know, becoming one company, they're merging. So right now they're celebrating that by giving you a free keyboard plugin. And the Ozone Elements, I think it's called. You get that for free. So that can be nice. You get a voucher too. They have it on both the Native and the Isotope site. And also, Isotope has an interesting deal now. You get 11 plugins for $49. Now, I'm not, we're not sponsored or bought by anyone. I'm just saying that's what I thought, saw, and it seemed interesting to me. So you get pretty much all what they have, the Element version, but still, Isotope is a pretty good company. They have a nice, you get a lot of good plugins.
I remember starting with Ozone when it first came out and I've been an Ozone fan from day one, just how they are able to just put everything in that one plugin and just seeing where it is now, it's just amazing. And RX is another one that really is useful sometimes to just to clean audio and that.
Oh, it's amazing. And now I want to say, because this deal, I mean, I have a lot of the plugins, so I don't need it. But the $49 for 11 plugins, then you get all the Element version. And that means that you can upgrade later. And they often have these deals. If you have the Elements version, it gets a really nice price cut. So this is the way to go if you want those plugins. What else? Oh, yeah, I didn't know that Isotope now has a subscription service just like East West. So instead of buying, because some of their, I'm not into subscription myself, but some of the plugins are very expensive. So if you want to check them out for a month, you can get the top tier, for a monthly fee. Tallinn by Orchestra Tools. I really love Arvo Pärt music, if you know that stuff, and they're going for that. I do think that you can kind of create that with other libraries because it's basically, really tender violins without vibrato, I say. But they sound really good, the samples. So that's something. It's a little pricey. Also, Orchestra Tools are always pricey, but in general, they're good stuff. Cine samples, really good stuff. They're 40% off everything right now. They tend to have that now and then, but right now. Sound Iron. Did we talk about them? They have 30% off now. And then I heard Audio Imperia Solo, and I was actually quite impressed with that library. I just heard it, but for the price and for what you get, if you're missing out some solo instruments, that is a great deal. You get all strings, all winds, and a voice. And it sounds good. It's not the best thing in the world, but it's really good for that price. So if you're missing out on Solus, I would definitely take a look at the solo library.
Yeah. I have the Hollywood solo violin and solo cello, so I'm all set.
Yeah, you need new ones. Yeah, you need other ones for sure. I mean, there are better strings.
My guess, by the way. But.
Yeah, but there are better string solos out there, but this is definitely good enough. So that's all I found for these sort of deals and news out there. But
yeah, Ravenscroft for mm-hmm. the piano. VST Buzz has Ravenscroft on special.
Okay.
I think it's like half off. So that Ravenscroft 275 is, it was one of my first piano reviews that I did in 2016 or 17. But it still is a really interesting piano to have.
Oh, I love pianos. I'm going to check that out. I'll check you out. Yeah. Awesome.
There's a sale at Reason, if that interests you.
Yeah, that's Reason is great. Swedish company.
And they have yeah. I don't know. I've been thinking about it, but I'm actually intrigued by their subscription. Immediately said no thanks to when they came out with it. But now I've learned more about what they've done with it over the year. And of course, now there's several instruments and there's a new effect that have been added. And if you signed up for it before, you wouldn't know about that.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I used to play with Reason many years ago.
And they have a modeling instrument called Friction that seems very interesting.
Yeah, if you're into meddling with your synthesizers, that's definitely a program to look into. Do they still have the interface with all the wires and stuff you have to... Yeah? Okay, cool. Yeah, that's fun. All right.
Does anybody want to talk about what they're doing with their channel?
We're just going to ask you that. Great question.
Simeon, what's your new thing?
You know, my problem is I'm so... unpredictable. My wife loves this line from the Maltese Falcon. Oh, Simon, you're just so wild and unpredictable. And that's really the way it is, because I'm working on things and I'm working on a big solo project for this violinist. And so it's just like, I'm in like smoke coming out of the steam. So it's like, okay, so when can I do the next thing? So it's like, I'll jump on and do a live stream because I really don't know when I'm going to do something. So be on the lookout the next few days, possibly for the Heinbach Zone. I'm going to be kind of showing like Heinbach's Spitfire Library landfill totems with maybe some bioscape from Luftrum, and kind of going into some of those unusual things. Fab Filter's Timeless 3, I just got that, and that was my first Fab Filter plugin, and was like, it's amazing. Yeah. So just kind of going into like some of the, you know, weird things. And also, one of the things that I love to do, I love to share, things that are not really high on the radar. So like individual developers. There's an individual developer on VI Control that created a piano library, and I'm going to try to feature that. I think it's I even forget the name of it, but it's really, really wonderful. So just to try to bring more of those unsung heroes of sample developers. The John Meyer Phelps, the piano man, that was just a surprise. Last Saturday I jumped on and just kind of played through that. Just a really another felt piano, but again, every library, I believe it has the soul of the developer sort of infused into it. So you can have 10 different felt libraries, but each one comes from a different point of view, a different perspective, and so they're all going to sound different. So they all have a place, I think. It's like the six, you can have the eight box of crayons or the 64 box with the sharpener. You have all of these different colors and shades that all sometimes you need. And so that's why it's so wonderful. So with my channel, expect the unexpected, because you never know what's going to pop up. So thank
Simeon,
you.
I just
it's great.
just wanted to say,
part of this roundtable.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, Sam. I mean, I just wanted to say, if you know developers like that, and maybe you want to invite them to the podcast, it could be something we can do. I have a few guys in mind as well. We can talk about that later, but just wanted to mention that. Awesome. Awesome. I mean, I can't speak here. Awesome. So, Reed, what's going on with your channel? Or
I've been doing a series on sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done two, and I'm working on one now, which is centered around Meteor, the UVI's library. And so the others were not involved with software. So this has been, let's just say I've been working on it for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because I looked at the other videos, and they explain every single feature, and they go into every little detail, and I'm thinking, I can't do that. I can't just repeat that, because then what's the point?
Mm.
So I had to sit and play with this for days and days and days to find out if there's something I could do with it that nobody else had at least demonstrated. Mm. So I came up, so it's not really a review of Meteor as much as it is kind of, here's how I use it.
Mm.
And I hope to do more sound effects library, sound effects videos, but I'm really looking forward to getting this done, because then I'm going to do some world music videos.
That sounds great. I'm looking forward to that. Awesome. So, Matthias.
Yes, well, not a whole lot has been happening. Behind the scenes, a lot has been happening, but I haven't uploaded a video in quite a while. So basically, the whole idea of the channel that I have is that I'm sharing the settings that I have for the Cinematic Studio series products, so the winds, the brass, and the strings, and I'm just trying to share the template in hopes that other people will also share their findings back. So what I'm currently working on is just the brass and converting those to videos. I started them as articles at first on my own website, but I've decided to turn them into videos, and I'm just being a little bit perfectionist about them, but they will drop eventually. And
awesome.
Then there's going to be 9 videos. So
all right.
Wow.
I just want to say,
how does that work exactly? What are you doing are you adding effects to them? Are you creating, what are your templates like?
Yeah, it's basically that it's just the selection of mics, the balance of the different mics, the processing I use on them. And also, I recently tried a slightly different approach to using reverb, so that's also the thing I'm going to share. But the broader idea is just sharing settings in the hopes that other people also engage back and sort of break through this whole thing that people have with secrecy about their own settings. Like, the people I look up to really make those very believable and realistic mock-ups. I would really like to know what they're using, and obviously they're not going to tell me. But maybe at least we can share a little bit more and learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I wanted to say that obviously I'm going to put all your links so that they are displayed in the right way everywhere. But maybe all of you can say your channel or wherever, Twitter or wherever you want, so everybody can hear it. So Simeon, again, what's your channel called?
Yeah, so the channel is YouTube/PraiseTracks. And so you can look at it for PraiseTracks or Simeon Ambergy. Twitter is PraiseTracks. Instagram, PraiseTracks. Wherever there's a praise, you'll probably find me close by. So it's great.
All right. Great. Reed.
I generally refer to myself as Tiger the Frog online. That's usually where I am on various forums. And I use that character for my music videos too, but my YouTube channel is just the YouTube, Reed Rosefeldt, my name.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think. Yeah, that's it.
Right. And Matthias? Sorry.
Yeah, I go by Project Anvil. So that is on VI Control, on SoundCloud, and on YouTube currently.
Matthias Project Anvil, is that because of Anvil Studios?
Yes. Yes, that was the inspiration. So basically what I was trying to do initially is see if I could recreate, to the best of my ability at least, the recording of The Empire Strikes Back, which was recorded at Anvil, hence the name. But I've since moved away a little bit from that because I realized there's so much mixing going on in those tracks. Where even from minute to minute, they have like a really close mic and then a whole distance mic, and you can't really capture that in a single template, but you can sort of get to that studio sound at least. So I stuck with the name.
Hmm. Yes, I do. So, well, as you have figured out, I'm working on the opus. It will be three videos. The first one will be coming up this week, and that's going to be the engine. I don't know. I started to do these also with the play engine because I realized there weren't any videos out there explaining all this stuff. So those videos became quite popular, which is fun. And so therefore I'm doing that again. But I'm hoping, what I really enjoy also, it's really to teach or talk about orchestration, or not just that, but how to produce more effectively in your DAW. So those videos will come again eventually after all this opus stuff. You can find me on Second Tier Sound if you search for that. That's the same in Twitter and in everything else, Instagram, Facebook. I think it's Sam the Composer, but I don't use Facebook really. But Second Tier Sound, search for that and you will find me. Excellent. So is there anything else we should talk about, or are we all finished for today? Yes? Or any last words I would want to say, not talk about?
That sounds very threatening.
Yeah, it does. I just realized I want to say any last words. Okay. Yeah, well, put that in.
But no, thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for setting up this whole roundtable. It's
Thank you for putting it together.
Oh, sure, no problem. So
it's a blessing to be in the company of you guys. It's just an honor, and I appreciate. I heard Sam's demo of the theme song. It was like, oh my goodness! So just very, very beautiful. So well done.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
I want to ask one question.
Yeah, sure.
One question: how many? Do you have a lot of friends that also are interested in virtual instruments that live nearby? Because most of the people I know in New York, they're, you know, I know very few people in New York City that are interested in that specific thing. Lots of musicians, but this stuff.
Close friends, not really.
Friends online.
Not close friends, but I'm starting now to develop a network a little bit, but not really, no.
Yeah. Mm.
I guess what I'm saying is that my friendships are with people all over the world.
Yes.
Much more than people across the street.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
I am playing for an Elvis tribute show on Monday at Derby Dinner Playhouse. It's a dinner theater. It's going to be the first live event that I've played at in like 2 years. So it's like, it's going to be a lot of fun. So I've got to learn a lot of Elvis's old gospel songs in the next couple of days. But yeah, wow. That's going to be exciting to actually be able to go out and play somewhere with some other musicians. So that's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun. Okay, guys, this was a real treat. So if this goes well, which I think it will, we will see each other again in 2 weeks. And if you were listening, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope to see you soon and let everybody know about it. So take care. See you next time.
Take care. Goodbye.